Hello, everybody. I'm George from Ireland, and this is the 80th anniversary today of the first meeting of the General Assembly of the United Nations in the building behind me. And nobody seems to be doing anything about it. There it is. That is Methodist Central Hall in Westminster, London. The Second World War had ended just 5 months earlier. And the Allies in the Second World War started calling themselves the United Nations. And they're even posters of the Allies with those names. Now, the League of Nations was founded in 1919. It's mentioned in the Treaty of Versailles. And that had clearly failed, but the League of Nations still existed at that time, wasn't formally dissolved until 1946. And indeed, some of the League of Nations buildings were later inherited by this successor organization, the United Nations. Nonetheless, the two organizations overlapped briefly. That's why Palais des Nations in Geneva, Switzerland, is formerly headquarters of the League of Nations, is now a United Nations building. So the Allies did that. And they to try and settle international disputes in future by pacific means, as they would say. And so formally founded in San Francisco in June 1945, so just before the end of the Second World War, mentioned by Churchill in his victory speech. So although they're called it the United Nations, they didn't actually have a proper organization till then. So the General Assembly, so each country that joined the United Nations would be here, would have one vote, and they had to establish what the rules were, how it was going to function, what were his duties, what was on topic, what was off topic, and not to be meddling in internal affairs. And nevertheless, they adopted the Charter of the United Nations, setting out various human rights and so forth, and saying that the organization existed to prevent war, as they said, which is twice in our lifetime has brought untold misery to mankind, to deal with other various international disputes that could be settled without the use of force. So they determined that they would meet here in London, perhaps a surprising choice. Now, though, of all the European capitals, this is one of the least damaged. The only ones that are less damaged would possibly have been Prague or maybe Bern. Okay, so they met here, and obviously about 20% of the buildings in London had either been destroyed or damaged. In many other cities, it was even worse. The food situation here wasn't as bad as other countries. There was still rationing of food. Got so bad under the Labour government, they started to have to ration bread, which they hadn't had to ration during the war. But the food paucity was even worse in other European countries. So that's why they met here for about a month, and they had to elect a president of the General Assembly. He was not president of the United Nations, just the General Assembly. They elected Paul-Henri Spaak of Belgium, later prime minister of his country. Gladwin Jebb had been the executive of the United Nations at that time, a Britisher and indeed an old Etonian. So they decided that there would be the permanent members of the Security Council, which is to say China, the Soviet Union, France, the United Kingdom and the United States. This is a bit like the Council of the League of Nations, which initially had been France, the United Kingdom, Japan and Italy. It was supposed to be the United States, but of course the United States refused to join. Well, President Wilson, it was his brainchild. I mean, he didn't actually originate the idea, he did more to promote it than anybody else. When it came to it, the United States Congress had refused to ratify it, and it was, I think, Henry Cabot Lodge, the senator, gave his famous speech, delivered almost in a monotone, to stock silence, "An American I was born, an American I shall die," why he believed this was an unwarrantable intrusion on American independence. And it didn't happen, because the United States became more isolationist in reaction to, they felt, the futility of the First World War. Anyway, so they met here, they debated various issues. So Japan obviously was kicked out. They'd been on the Axis side in the Second World War. Italy likewise kicked out for the same reason. China admitted. There's a great worry in the UK and France that the United States would refuse to join again. And the Soviet Union hadn't even allowed into the League of Nations initially until about 1930, and indeed left in 1939, was expelled. They didn't want to ever expel for the invasion of Finland. So they had to convince the Americans this would not be an intrusion on their sovereignty. So the five mightiest nations have the right of veto. And by China, obviously, they were meaning the Republic of China, the Kuomintang, as in the nationalists, not the communists. So the nationalists were still the recognized government of China. And that was to change, because then the Chinese Civil War began again. The idea was the communists and the Kuomintang would form a coalition after the war. That rapidly broke down. We know the Chinese Civil War continued with the communists winning and the Kuomintang fleeing to Taiwan, and it's in status ever since. This is the front of the building. So it is Methodist Central Hall. They don't call it a church, even though it is used for Christian worship most of the time. It's a very early 20th century building. They got lots of Methodists to donate money to it. But it's used for non-political purposes as well. Some of these, various talks addressed by Stephen Fry, debates about religion with Fry and Christopher Hitchens on one side against Anne Widdecombe and a Nigerian Catholic bishop. So alcohol was served there against the wishes of the Methodist Church at the time. The Methodists were persuaded not to use it for worship for a month while this was in session, partly because, of course, there were some people from other religions who wouldn't like that, wouldn't feel comfortable. But there are no overt religious symbols, big crosses or religious imagery in there, them being quite iconoclastic, the Methodist Church. So you can see the style of building, like neoclassical, very lofty ceilings, very spacious, there for all the delegates. But there are now 193 UN member states. There are about 40 founding members, which most European countries, some Latin American countries and so forth. But the Soviet Union was allowed to have a seat for Russia, another one for Ukraine, another one for Belarus, not the other Soviet republics, curiously. So that was it. They worked out what the procedure were, what the rules were. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights didn't come until 1948. So Roosevelt just died, and his widow, Eleanor Roosevelt, was one of the prime movers behind this. Later, their ambassador to the UN. And the United Nations didn't have a permanent headquarters. It was decided here that the headquarters would be New York City, partly because that was the largest city in the world. It was highly developed. It was completely unscathed by the Second World War. So that made sense. And then the United States began to admit diplomats, even from very hostile countries, to New York. And that some land from New York City in Manhattan was going to be gifted to the United Nations, be ruled by the United Nations, not the United States. Which is why the UN is going to got its own police force in that UN building there in New York City. And when I went there, because you can go there as a tourist, I thought, oh yeah, they'll all be American. The two I met, one was Norwegian, the other were Egyptian, So they're police officers in their own country, and then they go and serve there for a few years. Perhaps some of them are American, even their own tiny prison, in case somebody commits a crime there, have to hold him or her for a while. I don't know how long they could realistically detain somebody there. So that is Methodist Central Hall, where the a founding session of the United Nations General Assembly. So every country's got an equal vote in the General Assembly, but the General Assembly resolutions are simply recommendations, whereas decisions, resolutions of the United Nations Security Council, they are binding. They are international law. So five permanent members, and then the other non-permanent members, you need to have a majority of the members, and you've got to have none of the five permanent members wielding veto. So veto, as in Latin for I forbid, only one of the permanent members needs to say, I forbid, and it's not happening. Because they thought if they didn't do that, the United States would not join, maybe the Soviet Union wouldn't join. Remember, in those days, the French Empire was extant, and people believed it had a very long way to go. The British Empire existed as well, and likewise, many people thought it had a long-term future. But obviously, the balance of power is very, very different these days. The empire is long gone. France and the United Kingdom are greatly diminished in stature, both relative and absolute terms. Even the United States is not as mighty as it was. That was perhaps the peak of their power, 1945. Likewise, the Soviet Union doesn't even exist. There's Russia, which is only half the population of the former Soviet Union, but they're about 80% of its territory. And its population is declining and everything else. We're moving on oil and gas. There are all sorts of reasons there'll be a diminution in their might. Only China has risen in strength and risen enormously. It was a very underdeveloped country in 1945. And now it's a developed country, an economic superpower. Right, anyway, there we back to the beginning. That's about the foundation of this is a plaque unveiled by Boutros Ghali, UN Secretary General, for the 50th anniversary, an Egyptian, Christian indeed. Terje Lie, the Norwegian Labour Party politician, he tried to be president of the General Assembly. He didn't get it. He was made then Secretary General. The Secretary General is the number one human. As in, if an alien were to land, say, take me to your leader, Earthlings, we'd have to go to the UN Secretary General. Currently, Antonio Guterres of Portugal. So there's this gentleman's agreement that will go from one continent to the next. It being a European this time, it won't be a European next time. It might be an African, it might be an Asian, it might be someone from the American continent, and so forth. To date, no woman has ever held that office. And they think that there, again, seems to be an unwritten rule. A citizen of one of the permanent members of the Security Council can't get it because they're already too powerful. Their debates should India get a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. Since 2010, it's been British government policy that should be the case. Obviously, China's never going to do it because of the enmity between them, territorial disputes, and being part of a club of five is more exclusive than part of a club of six or more. Should the French seat be exchanged for a European Union seat? Yeah, no African country's got a seat there. How about an African Union seat? But if you do that, then even the more countries have got vetoes or whatever, more powers have got vetoes, it'd be very, very difficult getting resolutions passed. If you do get them passed, they'll be so watered down, they'll be so compromised, it'll take such a long time, they'll be worthless. It won't be able to take quick and decisive action. Another thing is to change the veto to say you have to have two votes to veto. All right, so they're always changing the other ones, the non-permanent members. Every 6 months, countries have voted on and off. So here we are, it's in Westminster, like I said. There's Westminster Abbey, that famous church for coronations, royal funerals. So right in the heart of London, you may recognise the Sovereign Tower behind me of the Parliament of the United Kingdom, where the monarch enters State of a Parliament every November. Okay, which is not the same as Big Ben. It's the same building as Big Ben. All right, so that's a little bit about the United Nations and their first session of the General Assembly. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.